Right now, that was Ben Folds 5, right?
Yes.
Why was that Ben Folds 5? That's a cover, too, of something.
Yes.
Of Barry Town, but I'm blanking on who did it.
It's it's a Steely Dan song.
That's right.
And it is from the soundtrack of Me, Myself, and Irene,
okay.
Which was all covers of Steely Dan songs.
Right, and I know now what you're
And
going.
Me, Myself, and Irene
was
directed by the Farrelly Brothers, who have a new movie. You know what? I don't care what you think, because if I connect it to a movie, you complain, and if I don't connect it to a movie, you complain.
I just want you so to pick songs that I
blow
like.
It out your blowhole, Dave White. I love that song.
Well, do you like that song?
I love that
like
cover.
The Steely Dan. You want the, you know.
Are those both like William S. Burroughs references?
Whatever the old person band is that
Steely. I actually like I heard the Ben Folds 5 version first, so it's sort of that's the one that imprinted on me. I like both of them, but I think I prefer the Ben Folds 5 version.
Because you're all gay for Ben Folds 5.
That's true. Not so much for Ben Folds solo, oddly enough, but
he does solo things still?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know.
And he was a judge on some show, not The Voice, but one.
How come you're not keeping up with him?
Because I don't. Because I'm not a big fan of his solo work. I was all excited about his solo work, and then I was like, it's not as good as the 5.
How does it differ? What's different about it?
I don't know. It's not as melodic or something. I'm not really sure.
I'm sounding weird in my mic.
Yeah, I know. I'm turning you up now.
All right.
We were sort of weirdly.
I sounded I was far away.
Yeah.
But now I sound like I'm close.
Yes. We're going to, you know, we've only been doing this show a year and a half. Eventually,
when are you going to learn how to make things sound right?
How to do this.
When are you going to learn how to do things properly? I can't be expected to know how to do any of this. It's your job to make us sound professional.
Well.
Because that's what we are.
That's our first problem.
We're professionals.
That's our first mistake, was putting this in my hands.
We're professionals, and it's your job to make us sound that way.
Okay, well.
You need to take lessons from other podcast people who are listening to us. Help us, or rather, I should say, help Alonzo, because I don't care. I don't care until we sound like crap, and then people go, "Oh, you sound like crap. You should do blah blah blah," and then I think whatever it is you're telling me doesn't make any sense to me anyway.
Blah blah blah.
Ginger. So you need to go talk to Alonzo about that.
Right. Well, I'm piecing this together.
Do we sound okay right now?
I think now we do, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we're like at equal.
I know our levels were all crazy all over the place last week.
Yes, because we had to share a mic, and that's never a good thing. But it worked out. I listened to it. I thought it was fine. No one complained.
Says you.
No one wrote in at all, in fact. I was very excited about last week's show. We had Drew Drogi here. We had our dear friend Gray Drake.
Nobody cared.
Not a single email. Some nice Facebook mentions, you know. And on Twitter, somebody said they enjoyed our Poedcast in honor of Chloe. But yeah, no emails. So, you know, we are going to read emails this week. We've been promising it for weeks.
Yep,
we're really
we're
doing
it
this time.
We're totally
so
really
you can always drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Maybe it's because you didn't name the email address last week.
I think I did.
I don't know that you did.
We'll go
you
back
might have been so excited by the fact that we had special guests.
I suspect that I read it. I know I didn't name check other podcasts last week, but I think I did all the other things. So anyway, that's neither here nor there.
So what's been going on with you lately, Alonzo?
I have new glasses.
What's happening in Alonzo Town?
I have new glasses that look exactly
like they're fogged up.
Are they?
One lens is now currently fogging up. Why is that happening?
Well, it's because I'm perspiring a bit, and that's what happens.
I've never seen your lenses fog up.
Well, you haven't been looking. when I'm wearing glasses.
You need... what you just said is going to be bleeped out of this podcast. I'm not kidding. Because No. That's not going out. That entire, if you just heard several seconds of blank space, that's because the thing that he just said, while not profanity, is also not going to go out on this podcast.
Whatever.
Be aware of that. I'm not kidding.
Well, I guess you'll have to learn how to edit it.
No, you're
going to. You don't know
that's
how.
That's not going out.
Here.
That's not going out over
I
this thing.
I paid for this microphone, Mr. Gorbachev.
I'm telling you right now. So movies that happened this week, one of them is The Three Stooges, and yes. I'm still actually sort of surprised by my reaction to it.
Yeah, no, same here.
And my
let's paint a picture of the night of that screening.
Dig if you will.
Yes,
the picture.
Okay, so we show up at the Fox lot, and we're already thinking, oh God.
I was pre-mad.
Yeah, me too.
Because I was pre-angry about this movie's existence.
We sort of occupied the two poles of most audience members approaching this material. Dave's a fan of the Three Stooges.
I'm not simply a fan.
Dave adores the Three Stooges.
I'm a super fan.
I've never.
There's nothing better than the Three Stooges. They are the equivalent of the Marx Brothers.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, they are.
No.
In a whole different direction.
No.
In an entirely different direction. No. They are the equivalent of the Marx Brothers. I'm not saying they're better or the same, even, or that they do the same, or that they did the same thing.
No,
I'm
they
saying
certainly didn't. But they're
in
not
terms
the
of laughs for me.
Well, for you,
just as much laughter from the Three Stooges as from the Marx Brothers.
All right, fine. In the little room, Mark to Dave White, they are equivalent.
The laughs of the Three Stooges are the kind that come out of your butt, and the laughs of the Marx Brothers are the kind that come from your mind, where you are witty and brilliant. Totally
in any
different,
event.
Totally different directions.
So Dave, super psyched about the original Three Stooges.
Yes.
Me, never a fan, never found them all that funny.
Because you're wrong.
Neither of us wanted to see this movie.
No,
it's like, really? New Three Stooges doing old Three Stooges shtick?
Not what should happen.
Yeah, we were not feeling it for different reasons, but totally not feeling it. So then, of course, you know, and the Farrelly brothers, let's face it, have not made a good movie.
They've been sucking
in a while.
Lately.
They've been, yeah, I mean, Hall Pass.
They've been sucking.
Was really painful.
Hall Pass was sucking. The Heartbreak Kid was sucking.
Yeah. So just
even the ones that weren't completely terrible recently have been not as good.
Yeah.
As There's Something About Mary
and Dumb and Dumber,
or Dumb and Dumber,
or even Kingpin.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. And then, of course, so then we get there, and mind you, this is one of those ones where we've been told that there's an embargo.
But somehow you have the Me, Myself, and Irene soundtrack.
Because I like that song.
But how did that end up in your...
I somewhere heard this cover of Barrytown. I was like, wow, that's uh-huh. I love this, and this is a Ben Folds Five song I don't own. Where does it come from?
I see.
Oh, the Me, Myself, and Irene
Got
soundtrack.
It. Got it.
That's where that happened. So this was a screening that was embargoed. Like, you know, we were told that, like, you know, no reviews could run before like 4 p.m.
on Thursday.
Which is, of course, that's always the kiss of death, you know. And there was even somebody had even said that we were going to have to sign something. And that was a second.
We got to the Fox lot, and there was a security person standing at the top of the stairs from the parking garage.
Right.
Telling us that we had to go take our phones back to our car. Now, I always leave my phone in the car already.
Right.
But it's weird on the Fox lot. I once got into an argument with a Fox publicist who assured me that at every Fox screening, whether it be on the lot or in a public theater. That phones were never allowed. And I was like, woman, do you even go to these screenings?
Yeah,
because that is not what happens.
Yeah, I mean, if there was a consistent policy... Ever.
There's never a consistent policy about anything with these screenings.
We're boring people.
No, we're not. They're fascinated by the way we conduct our jobs. People don't even know how we do our
jobs. Yeah, and they don't care.
No, they do. People ask me these things. They're like, so how do you see the movies? What happens? Where do you go? Well, here's what would happen.
So we're on the Fox lot. I have to go take my phone back to the car. And then we're told that, like, when we get to the theater, that we're going to have to sign something.
There's
and
another woman stationed about 20 feet away from the security
from the
person
first
that
one,
says,
yes.
Be prepared to sign paperwork. Now, the last time we had to sign paperwork
listeners,
at a screening.
Long-time listeners of the show will recall.
Both of you. We had to sign non-disclosure agreements when we went to see the Nutcracker in 3D.
Which is the steamiest pile
that is
we've
a movie,
ever seen.
If I remember my review of that film correctly, I think I said in my review, that the people who made it should all be put in prison.
That may have been.
Yeah. And
I would stand behind that.
That was the last time that anyone ever said, sign this paper and vow not to discuss it until it's time to write your review, which should not run until the day of the film's release.
Yes.
Like, so when she said that to
they,
us.
They, you know, in the Nutcracker in 3D, I think they would have ideally made it, our reviews run like the Monday after it opened, right, if they could have.
The when the woman said, be prepared to sign paperwork, I thought, ooh, great. they hate this movie.
Yeah, this, like, is double secret probation.
When this happens, you know that the studio is ashamed, right, of the thing that they're putting out. And so, but we got up there to the line, and it turned out not to be the case.
Right, but
the people who had to sign things were like the riffraff,
right,
that they had invited.
But they had invited.
But they had
a lot of regular folks. Riff-raff. They weren't all riffraff necessarily.
If you are not a film critic and you are at a screening with me, you are riffraff. That's just how it is. I'm sorry, but you know what? I should be. I'm. You know what? After 12 years of doing this, I don't want to be near people.
When no, I know what you
this
mean.
Movie, I don't need people to tell me what to think about
and,
this movie.
And usually when studios do this, it's because they don't trust... They think that film critics are going to somehow not trust their own opinions if they are surrounded by people who are laughing at a comedy that isn't funny, or if they're surrounded by children at a terrible kids movie who are somehow being enchanted by the kids movie.
We live in delicate cages made of blown glass.
Exactly.
And
cannot,
and
you know,
cannot
perceive the outside world on our own.
Be sullied by the universe.
Now, I often wonder where they find these folks sometimes, because generally it's like, you know, they're radio station winners or whatever, but I will never forget going to see the press screening.
They go to Dollar General and they hand out passes.
At the
That's
fashion
what happens. They go okay. to Dollar General. And they end up
because we went to the there was a press screening of Gigli, believe it or not. They actually did show us that movie in advance.
Mm-hmm. And how?
There was a woman who sat behind us who laughed uproariously at everything.
Yeah.
Like when
even things that were like
when Ben
not
Affleck
even meant to be jokes,
says
she was laughing at
says
these things.
S happens, she laughed. Like that was just the most uproarious turn of phrase she'd ever heard in her life. I was like, wow. Whatever they gave you to sit behind us was worth it because, you know, you clearly are a professional fun haver.
I think we were just being, I think we were just getting our reward for the time that we saw Sweet November and laughed, laughed all the way through it. And those ladies in front of us were so mad.
Yes, well, mainly because it was a tearjerker.
It was funny.
No, it was hilarious.
It was hilarious.
No,
that
no
movie.
Question.
Totally, you should watch that movie.
Yeah, the remake. Charlize the remake Theron. With Charlize Theron and Keanu Reeves.
Man, it's great.
Did we
it's
ever?
So,
did,
so
did,
funny.
Did TiVo eat the original?
Yeah.
Oh, boo. Well, it'll come on again.
Because of the Three Stooges.
Because of the Three Stooges. Getting back to the Three Stooges.
Because I put all the Stooges shorts with Curly.
They had a marathon.
In TiVo. And there's like 30 of them. And so like the AMC was showing like a lot of them. And so
yeah, you might as well just like put tribbles or something. Because they just multiplied like crazy and ate everything that was
and
in
then
our TiVo.
It ate all the things in the TiVo. I'm sorry.
Anyway, so the punchline to all this is after this gauntlet of nightmares of seeing this movie that we didn't even want to go to in the first place, the film starts, and Gray, actually, I don't know if I told you this, she turns to me as the Fox logo is coming on the screen, and she right. goes, what if this is the funniest movie ever?
I didn't know she said that to you.
And I went, oh.
Nice. And then it turns out to be...
And then it turns out to be really funny.
Really funny, yeah.
Now,
I thought it might have been just me. Like, as I walked out, I thought, because I couldn't gauge, because I could hear the riffraff laughing.
Right.
And I knew I was cracking up for the entire film.
Yeah, me too.
But I wasn't paying attention to, you know, professional colleagues right. seated nearby. And so I was kind of holding my tongue when I came out as I was thinking, all right, you laughed because you were an idiot, Dave White. You laughed because everything makes you laugh, because you're the easiest laugh there is. You know, I saw Your Highness and laughed all the way through Your Highness. It's a terrible movie. Your Highness is a terrible movie. But I laughed and laughed and laughed. Why? Because I'm an idiot when it comes to this stuff. And so I thought, all right, they're bonking each other on the head. And you know what's great? People getting bonked on the head. Always. It's always funny when people get bonked
with
on the head.
With that sound effect.
With that sound effect. And but then I walk out and Manola is standing there. Manola Dargis, who's the film critic for the New York Times, like basically the most important film critic in the country, right? Basically? Would we say that? I would say that.
I would say that. I mean, not in terms of like, you know, If film critics are important at all anymore, she is the most
important. She's the one.
Yes.
I would say even if film critics aren't important anymore, she still is.
But I'm saying, but you know what I mean. Like her opinion doesn't necessarily have anything to do with like what money a movie makes, which
that never happens.
Right. But right. But in terms of like, I would say influential, no question. Yes.
And so, and it also is very nice that she's a friend of ours, you know, so we were just chatting with her and she's like, wow, that was so funny. And I was like, thank you. Thank you for being right along with me.
there was a scrum afterwards and it was sort of like people who liked the Stooges.
And her review that ran in the Times on Friday.
It's a rave, yeah. People who like the original Stooges like the movie, and then like I was talking to other people. And
you weirdos who don't like the
Stooges. Other people who don't like the Stooges also enjoyed this movie.
I don't understand. That's the thing I don't understand. I still can't figure out that. Neither you nor Gray have been able to explain to me how it is that you don't like the Three Stooges, yet you do like this film.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Because
so maybe you guys are the idiots.
Because I went back and when you were overtaking, you were filling our TiVo with all these old Curly shorts, I watched some of them and I was like,
they're brilliant. They're the best thing ever in the world.
No, I don't even think they're as good as Laurel and Hardy.
You get out of this house.
And Laurel and Hardy do the physical stuff too.
I'm not talking to you anymore.
Fine, don't.
I'm done. I'm done with this podcast.
You're the troglodyte who thinks the Stooges are funny.
They are the funniest thing ever that has ever been in the world.
Anyway,
the funniest thing.
You are a moron, as you've currently previously admitted and are now underscoring. So in any event, this movie is very, very funny and very well put together. And I really admire the fact that in addition to like the slapstick that you would imagine, there are these great sort of elaborate jokes that are set up. Like, I was reminded of Rat Race, which I mentioned in my review, which was sort of the last movie I can think of where you would have these gags that would just have like one little throwaway thing and one little throwaway thing and a third one, a fourth one, a fifth one, and then bam, they all come together in this big mega punchline. It's like, whoa, you know, like there's this whole thing where Larry shoots an arrow into the air.
Right.
And all he says is like, someone's gonna get hurt with this, you know. And then they don't mention it again for a while, but then other stuff happens, and then it all, you know, it's, oh god, this movie's funny, and people don't believe us. They think because like most people,
if we tell you it sucks, you don't believe us. If we tell you it's good, you don't.
But no, but everybody saw that trailer. Everybody saw that trailer.
The trailer
was like,
sucks.
Was like,
that trailer would put fear in my heart.
Yeah. So believe me, we were like you, dreading this movie and not having any interest in seeing it. But trust us, we've seen it. We have been.
Yeah.
We've walked through hell and back, and it's funny.
Yeah. The I even liked how it's like the Farrellys knew that by making it kind of a family film and by adding an orphanage full of like, you know, waify orphans.
Right.
And they knew that the things they were putting in the film were treading into Gary Marshall territory.
Yes.
But then they would do things like, well, the movie opens with them as babies being zipped into a duffel bag and thrown from a speeding car onto the steps of the orphanage. And I was like, they're throwing babies from a moving automobile. And I thought, this could be an okay movie.
Well, and even before that, like, there's an adorable orphan musical number that gets quashed like three bars in
by
Larry David. You know,
as a nun named Sister Mary Mangala. And so, you know, and then there's these weird touches that don't make sense, and you would wonder why. Like, if it were anyone else except these guys, except the Farrellys, you would wonder why this person is in the movie. But you know that at one point they said, hey, what if we put Jennifer Hudson in this movie?
The cast of the Jersey Shore, that to me seems like it would be the death of comedy.
Well, like a Craven move.
Yeah, it would just be this sort of dated, stupid thing that was just desperate for some kind of relevance. Like the kind of thing you would do in like the epic movie, date movie, those guys would do.
But what they do with the cast of the Jersey Shore is hilarious.
Yeah.
And they get the cast of the Jersey Shore, in fact, gets exactly what they deserve.
Yes.
In this movie.
So blows like, to the head.
The whole idea of that, you know, the whole like this, let's do something that appears cynical and then we're going to actually make it part of the film.
Yeah.
Or let's do something that appears completely random, getting back to the Jennifer Hudson role. Mm. She plays a nun. And you're like, well, why is she in this movie? Did she just wander in from another movie set?
Well, you reminded me of that episode of Tarzan where Diana Ross and the Supremes play missionary nuns.
Yeah, it's like that. And so, but then by the end of the movie, you realize that Jennifer Hudson is part of like punchline that they've been saving for the very end. And so it's really like I would watch this again.
I would too. You know? I would.
And so that's I it's not the Three Stooges. You know, you really if you are like me and you really love the Three Stooges, you're going to have a strange time watching this film because you're going to laugh and you're going to be like, I'm laughing because it's the Three Stooges. And every once in a while, you're going to think to yourself, oh, but wait, it's not the Three Stooges. It's these tribute guys. Show. It's Stooges Mania. Right. It's like, it's not the Three Stooges, but an incredible simulation. Yeah. And so
it's the Cirque du Soleil Beatles.
And so that's the strangest thing about it for a big fan like me is the whole, you know, not, feeling like you're cheating on the Three Stooges by watching this film and enjoying it, but you just get over that.
And I have to say, I mean, like, and again, I'm not as big of a fan, so it wasn't as big a deal for me. It wasn't like watching Cate Blanchett try to be Katharine Hepburn in The Aviator or something. But I really, after a while, sort of lost myself in these guys being the Three Stooges, you know? I mean, like...
Well, Sean Hayes does an impeccable Larry voice.
Disappears into that role.
Yeah.
And Will Sasso is a really good Curly.
Yep.
And Chris Diamantopoulos, who plays Mo,
is the most shocking, I think, of all, because he's been on TV forever. I went to his IMDb page.
Right.
He's been on every show.
Mm.
He's been on, seriously, a dozen different TV shows.
And the thing is, like, if you're paying attention right now, if you've seen those Charles Schwab commercials, those... where the cute guy talks about financial planning, that's him.
Right.
And he also plays like Ava's Eurotrash, you know, occasional lover on Up All Night. So but you would never recognize him.
From thing to thing.
Yeah.
You would see him in this or on, and possibly on Up All Night, and possibly in these commercials just as generic sort of handsome dude.
Handsome guy, yeah.
And you wouldn't know it was the same guy from place to place. Which I find crazy. But of course,
he's a chameleon.
Now I know what he looks like
out
of the Mo costume. So I know now. I'm familiar now. Like, because I've been saying for weeks, I've been like, oh, that look at that guy and that, you know, like that's a handsome dude in that commercial. And
he's not as handsome as the post office guy.
No.
Just saying.
The post office guy isn't handsome. The post office guy is a puppy. That's a whole other different thing.
All right.
That's not handsome. That's oh, he's a cute one to pinch the cheeks. You know, that kind of thing. That's a different... The post office guy has a cult now. There's a whole cult of the post office guy on the internet now.
Funny. They're like post office guy slash fiction?
Probably. I haven't seen any, but... But yeah, no, this is a really funny movie.
Yeah.
And even if you don't like the Three Stooges?
Correct.
Maybe.
Even if you don't like the Three Stooges, give this a shot.
I will say maybe not if you hate them. Because I don't think you hated them.
I don't hate them. I wouldn't turn the channel
I took a little poll on my Facebook page saying, because the thing I kept hearing leading up to this was that like women don't like the Three Stooges.
Right.
And I said, okay, you know, ladies, tell me, is this a thing? And I would say, unfortunately, for the Three Stooges and for ladies, it's about 90% true.
Huh.
For every one woman that I would hear from that would say, I love these guys, there were nine others that were, they didn't just casually dislike them.
Mm-hmm.
It inspired anger. In them. Like, I would never date a man who liked them.
Ooh.
You are an idiot if you like them. I hate them. It's cruelty. It's violent. You know, the whole the idea of abuse and cruelty and violence was a strong theme in the hatred that I heard. Whereas for me, the idea of abuse and cruelty and violence is just
hilarious,
funny. Yeah, yeah.
But it's, so, it's also, I would argue, probably the oldest form of humor.
Right. And so,
you know, so maybe the court, you know, jester with the empty goat's bladder. Yeah,
if you're one of those people, male or female, who actively despises these guys,
this may not be your
thing. No, obviously.
But if you like physical comedy, but just don't necessarily think the original Stooges are funny, you may have a good time.
Give it
a
shot,
because I did.
Give it a cable watch one of these days. No, I don't ever want to tell anyone to spend $12 on something, because that's just how much, you know, everything costs now. Do you know the ArcLight tickets are like $16 now?
I believe it, but again, riffraff keeps them out.
True.
And there's people you can complain to if they somehow get in.
True. True.
I don't know. I never want to be in the position of, like, I think Ebert actually points out, like, you should, as a critic, you should never tell people how they're going to respond. You can only tell them how you responded.
Of course.
So, you know, I don't necessarily say, you should go see this movie, but I say, I wound up liking this movie and didn't think I would, so take that for
what it's worth. If I like something, then everyone should do it.
Yeah, no. Warhorse.
We're not going to be spoilery with Cabin in the Woods.
No, we're not.
Although, I tell me what you think about this. Here's a basic plot premise of Cabin in the Woods. And again, none of this will give anything away.
No spoilers.
Five college students go to a cabin in the woods.
Yes.
Bad things happen.
Yes.
Okay, that's everything you need to
know. Pretty much, yes.
Now, yesterday on Facebook, my friend and yours, Dave Cobb, he linked to my review on movies.com.
Right.
By the way, I am Dave White of movies.com.
And I'm Alonzo Duraldi of therap.com and What the Flick.
Yeah. We didn't even introduce ourselves last week.
I know. People are still waiting.
He linked to my review, and he said, Dave White, you know, says no spoilers in his review, and there are no spoilers in this review. And then our friend Brian commented and said...
San Diego Brian or San Francisco Brian? Or L.A. Brian?
L.A. Brian.
Oh, okay.
He said, spoilers are irrelevant because the movie gives away everything in its opening scene. And I was wondering if I agree with that?
I do not agree with that.
I mean, okay, on one level.
Okay, yes. I mean, it lets you know that something's afoot, but it doesn't tell you what exactly.
They don't, there's not a, the opening scene, if you know nothing of the film, the opening scene is
disconcerting.
At best, confusing.
Yeah.
And at least it is, one where you think, okay, I get what I think this is, but why is this happening?
Right.
You know, and you could say, and I mean, this is a man who, you know, writes screenplays for a living. So,
true.
You know, his experience is more evolved
than
yours and mine. But I think watching the opening scene, I think honestly the best you could say is
it whets your appetite
that I know what's coming, sort of. Like obviously this scene has something to do with...
It reveals something about the film's approach, but it doesn't reveal all the goodies.
No, but what it does reveal, if you're going to extrapolate a little, is that the people in that opening scene have a really instrumental...
Have a part to play.
Part to play in what's coming down the road. But you don't know what they're going to be doing.
Right.
And you don't know why they're doing it.
Yeah.
And that stuff isn't revealed until...
Much later.
The why isn't revealed until much later.
Right.
But the...
We get bits of it as it goes along and it pieces together. Yeah, no. I think the first scene doesn't... No, I disagree with Brian's comment on that.
When I read it, I thought, is that true? Like, do I have to go back and look at it again? And but if I go back and look at it again, I look at it from the perspective of already knowing.
Right, exactly. So yeah, I knew nothing.
I thought of this as a very, I thought it was a very surprising, really fun, like, you know, taking of the horror genre and tilting it on its side.
Yeah.
And
I think even discussing what I can say within the context of the bit of plot we revealed, just that the opening scene where you meet the five college students and they interact with each other is so well written. Like, yeah, they're so interesting and funny immediately. You know, that first scene where we're getting to know them, and like they immediately emerge as people with personalities and who are interesting, and we actually care if they're going to live or die or not. And you know, I there's literally,
and they turn those stereotype characters on their head a little bit too.
Yeah, yeah. Even within that scene, they're not who you expect them to be.
Right.
And like there's, I've mentioned this before elsewhere, but like Shark Knight 3D has that exact same setup. Yeah. And it's so bad and so uninteresting and pedestrian. And so it's like already I was like, okay, we're in good hands here.
Right.
You know, I'm not like a giant Buffy fanatic. I like the show. I've seen a lot of it, but you know, so it's co-written, the film's co-written by Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard, who also directed, and who he Goddard
he wrote Cloverfield. He was a producer on Lost.
Yes, and Whedon is
a lot of things.
Whedon is Joss Whedon. You know, yeah, who that is. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. I really enjoyed myself, and you know, I'd say if you're a fan of those guys and what they do, this movie would be right up your alley. And if you're going to see it at all, see it sooner rather than later, and avoid hearing anything about it.
Right. Right. Now, having said that, it's not playing well with audiences for some reason.
Yeah, it got like a cinema score of a C average in general and a D plus among women.
Where does the cinema score come from?
Cinema score is basically, I don't know where that comes from. They pick like, I think, three cities at random, three large markets, and right, then they exit poll people on like opening night.
Like, face-to-face exit poll?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do they say, give this movie a grade?
Yeah.
Really? C minus, huh?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Now, do you want to do that thing like they do on Secretly Timid, where we set a timer and we talk about Cabin in the Woods for like 5 minutes with spoilers and people can fast forward? Or do you want to not do that?
Why don't we do it
when the DVD comes out?
When the DVD comes out.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. When the DVD comes out, we will have a spoiler talk, and we'll time it so that if you still haven't seen it, you can avoid it.
Because I would like to talk about all the things that happen. Mm-hmm. Although I don't know that we need to. I really think, now that I know that the cinema score is so low,
uh-huh,
I feel like what's going to happen in this movie is the same thing that happened to, and I referenced
Scott Pilgrim. Yeah.
I said in my review, this is Scott Pilgrim versus the World set in a slaughterhouse.
Wow, you were righter than you knew.
And I think that what might be going to happen with this is that the Scott Pilgrim thing might happen to it.
Yeah,
where it doesn't do the business they wanted it to, and
but it has a hardcore audience that loves it.
The vast majority of the audience isn't going to like it.
Yeah.
Like, super nerds are going to go out and see it this weekend and be all like, yeah, it's so great. But, because that's, here's the thing, you self-select, you know, your niche in the world.
Right.
You know, you, like all of my Facebook friends, I'm hearing from them this weekend are saying, and all my friends in actual, you know, face-to-face life as well are saying, oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
I had a blast. But that apparently is not, I guess we aren't hanging out with the normal folks.
Probably not. Well, and the thing is, you know, this is a larger issue, but, you know, nerd culture used to not really get catered to that much. And now
it gets catered to.
Now it gets catered to like crazy. But the thing is, I think at some point it's going to backfire, because for every like Iron Man or, you know, Captain America that makes a lot of money, these smaller movies that are more like that play gangbusters at Comic-Con,
right,
don't necessarily do well. You know, your Scott Pilgrims, your Snakes on a Plane, even
right,
going back to like something like Mallrats, you right, know. So it's like, yeah, that audience will generate a lot of you know, excitement pre, you know, opening, and it'll be all over the web and it'll get talked about and stuff. And and at Comic-Con or South by Southwest or wherever, those, you know, they'll turn out in mass and go bananas for it. But it's not going to, that's not going to lead to to money. Now, if these movies are made in a way that they can make their money on DVD and whatever, then great. Theatrical doesn't really matter, and you can go niche with that. But you know, it's definitely a trend that is happening that I'm sure is maybe putting the kibosh on other projects that are like it, because studios are like, I don't want another Scott Pilgrim where we spend all this money and you know, 10 people adore it and everybody else rolls their eyes and well, doesn't
we
get
know,
it.
We know all 10 of the people
exactly, who adore
it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I don't think of myself as, like, who was complaining that it was just for fanboys? What critics said this?
On Film Week, apparently, I didn't hear it, but Tom Ford told me, our friend Tom Ford, told me that Henry Sheehan and Wade Major were sort of dismissing it as kind of fanboy kind of stuff.
I'm not a fanboy.
You may be more of one than you think.
Do you think I am?
You watch Game of Thrones.
Because it's great.
And you love the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Also great.
I'm just saying, you like things that fanboys like.
I watch Martha Stewart every day, too.
You contain multitudes, Dave White.
I do.
You always have.
I do. I'm pretty fascinated.
You listen to Burzum and Kylie. But, you know, you have fanboy leanings. Which is not a bad thing. It just means that you like things that fanboys like, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I
food.
Oxygen. I you know, but I think this movie has more mainstream appeal than something like Paul.
Paul's not a very good movie.
Well, there's that. But, I mean, Paul was so aggressively marketed to the Comic-Con market that it actually begins and ends at Comic-Con.
I know.
So, I don't know.
Honestly, for me, the best thing about Paul was Kristen Wiig.
She was terrific.
Yeah. And it's not, I don't think it's a very good movie.
I liked Seth Rogen. I liked his voice work.
Fine.
I liked the
blind. If you like a cartoon dog, fine.
Well, apparently I do. I liked the Blythe Danner appearance at the end.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, not a great movie. But Cabin in the Woods, lots of fun if you like that sort of thing, apparently.
Right, yeah.
And we do.
Totally do. It's fantastic. It's one of my favorite movies that's come out so far this year.
And
the Turin Horse.
And speaking of Baylitar,
we saw Baylitar's first film this week at CineFamily. We saw Family Nest.
Now they're doing a complete. Apparently,
1979.
There's a complete Baylitar retrospective. I think 77. There's a Baylitar
retrospective
that is touring, that's playing like at Harvard and various places around the U.S. And CineFamily, I guess, snagged being the L.A. location for it. If you want to go Google him, it's B-E-L-A. It's the last name of T-A-R-R. He's a big deal in certain film circles. And I have heard of him for a long time, but I've never seen any of his movies. And
well, the reason you've not seen any of his movies is because they've been so difficult to see.
Yeah.
There's very few moments in his, you know, career where you could say, we could point to an American theater and say, yes, this latest Baylitar film is playing here for a week or two.
Right.
That's not how it goes. He winds up in museum screenings.
For like, one night.
Like a one-night thing at the Walker Art Center or
LACMA
or MoMA or whatever. Because these are art films.
And a lot of
these
stuff...
These are art films. A lot
of stuff is on DVD, but he just sounds like the kind of guy that I really needed to see in a theater.
The early films pre-Damnation are fine for DVD. But once you get into the when he develops the style of his... Like the long take... You want,
which is not a sequel to the Long Long Trailer.
You want a movie theater. You want a big screen because, in addition to those extremely long, excuse me, I'm going to cough. Sorry about that. In addition to those very long takes, his cinematography becomes this. You know, all his films are in black and white. And the cinematography in the later films from the late 80s on becomes this like beautiful sort of silvery black and gray and shiny, sort of, you know, everything is shadows and darkness. Right. And
all of his films were in black and white?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And they're gorgeous. They're like, they're so beautiful. And that's why I'm so excited to see Touring Horse actually on a screen.
In 35.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're also showing all of these in 35, too, yeah. Which is...
Boy, did we get a crappy print of... like, this print of Family Nest came from, like, the Hungarian Film Archive or something. And if that's the copy they have, then they're in trouble. Someone needs to strike a print of that movie.
Yeah, but something tells me, like, the greatest print of that movie would still look like it was filmed in the bottom of an ashtray.
Well, yes. Yes, there is that. But, I mean, the print broke.
Yes, yesterday. It did. Yeah. It was scratchy. It was not the greatest. And the subtitles were, you know.
Were crazy.
Yeah.
Hungarian ESL student did that. But here's the thing. I love watching movies on banged up prints. It makes me happy. I don't know why it makes me happy.
It's like getting a hiss and pop when you play an old album, you know?
Yeah.
It just feels...
I like it.
Genuine somehow.
It feels nice. I don't have a whole, you know, manifesto about it. I just like the way it makes me feel.
It's a reminder of analog.
Yeah. So, Family Nest is a bummer. It's about a little teeny tiny little apartment in Hungary, in Budapest. In the late 70s, when the housing crisis in Hungary was such a big deal. And buildings were going unused, thanks to communist bureaucracy. And people were squatting in them. But to get an actual apartment...
Officially,
you had to get on these waiting lists that would take, you know, forever.
Yeah, see, that I remember the movie was made in 1977 because they tell her that the soonest they can get her into a flat is in 79/80.
Yeah. And so the there's this, you know, overly large family all squashed into one apartment. And
it's mainly about this woman who is living with her in-laws. At the beginning of the movie, her husband comes back from the army. And already, like, things have been fraught between the daughter-in-law and the parents.
They all hate
each other, and they're driving each other nuts, and they're all up in each other's business because they're in this tiny, tiny, you know, like, one room in a kitchen apartment or whatever.
Right.
And so then, and then she's got a kid, and so now with the husband back, she's hoping they can get their own place, but that doesn't seem likely, and so...
Because their marriage is a crap.
And their marriage is falling apart, and she keeps fighting with the in-laws.
And he rapes her friend.
And she was possibly...
cheating on him.
Unfaithful to him while he was off in the army, and...
Here's the thing. This film is shot entirely in up-your-nose close-ups of every single person. You barely see this apartment. All you feel is intense claustrophobia because everyone's pores are so visible.
And these are... He did not cast for looks. Or for good looks, anyway.
Oh, they all have a look.
Yeah, definitely.
Everyone in this movie's got a look.
There's, you know, in the notes for this series, Hadrian at the Cine Family referred to Bailatar having a boiled potato aesthetic. And his cast definitely all resembled boiled potatoes.
Right. It's not a fun movie.
No. But
to watch. But it's really, really affecting and sad.
It's very Cassavetes-ish, I thought.
At the end when you realize that there's just no
upside.
There's no upside to this. There's no hope. And there's this, the counterpoint are these like happy Hungarian pop songs that get played throughout the film. And by the end of it, you're like, oh, I just want everyone to just be comfortable for like 5 minutes. Like, could they all just have a nice couch to sit on? You know, like it's kind of heartbreaking in that you really start to feel bad. For everybody, even the worst person in the movie, who's this the
brother,
the father, he's the worst guy in the movie.
I guess, but the brother who's a rapist and has an illegitimate child somewhere, I thought was right up there.
Yeah, but the father, it turns out, is...
Oh, that's true.
...is getting all handsy with the daughter-in-law.
That wasn't the daughter-in-law. That was somebody else.
No.
At the end, where
they talk about the father... No. That was just a random woman he was trying to pick up.
Right, yeah.
The daughter-in-law talks about how he...
He was groping her under the blanket. Yeah. So he's the alpha pig. I'll give you that.
He's disgusting.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's great. And I'm serious about that.
As misery movies go, it's worth checking out.
I really love really miserable movies where everyone is just in some kind of horrible despair.
Do you leave feeling better?
About me?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I mean.
No, I leave feeling great about me. Like, oh, wait, I actually have no problems. This is awesome. I think the one time that I saw a movie like that where I just couldn't shake it and felt really actually bad for a long time afterward and did not enjoy that sort of miserableism was Warzone.
Oh.
Because the things that happened in that...
That's grim.
The things that happened in that movie are just beyond...
That's when Tim Roth directed, yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, it's really good.
I don't even want to... I can't even say
what happens.
It's borderline Serbian film kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even want to talk about what happens in it. But when I was...
But on the plus side, it's got Tilda Swinton in it.
It does have Tilda Swinton in it. When I was finished watching it, I just thought, I gotta go take a bath.
Well, there was that year where it was nasty. Like Tim Roth and Gary Oldman both directed movies that both starred Ray Winstone.
Oh yeah,
and they were both super bummers.
Horrible guy. Yeah,
it's like there's a double feature for you.
Yeah, far cry from Sexy Beast.
Yeah, definitely. No kidding.
Yeah.
Whew.
So we saw that. We went to see that for fun.
Yes.
We went to see Family Nest.
On our off time.
We went to see Family Nest as date night. That's what we do.
Yeah.
And
we're the special people.
Lockout.
Yeah.
I did not see Lockout.
Poor me.
It sucks.
Yeah. That's what I hear.
That's all I'm going to say about it. It sucks.
It looks like a total ripoff of Escape from New York.
And... a little bit of Die Hard.
Hmm.
The worst of Luc Besson, whatever it is to you, whatever the worst of Luc Besson to you,
right,
is what this is.
Gotcha.
It's just boring, not interesting. And here's the thing. A movie about space prison. That should be awesome. Like, there should be levels of awesome that you should just be walking right into and should just kick you in the face. That should be the first, there shouldn't even be a question about a movie about space prison being rad.
Well, Alien 3 was kind of a snooze, and that was about space prison.
You have
too.
To work hard to make a movie about space prison be terrible.
And they put the hours in.
To make it. Oh, the script is terrible. The acting is terrible. The action is boring and trite, and there's nothing that happens that's exciting.
Mm.
Nothing. There's a stupid twist that is pointless. And worst of all, it feels like, this is what I said in my review, it feels like that Luc Besson hates Guy Pearce. Like, and wants to humiliate him on some level, and then tricked him into being in this movie. He's the most obnoxious, piggish anti-hero. And an anti-hero is a fine line to walk because you're supposed to, you know, like the guy even though he's kind of a jerk.
He's roguish.
This is full on cross over the line into
jerk.
Terrible jerk. Like, he saves Maggie Grace's life. That's the point of the movie. She's the president's daughter.
Right.
And she's doing a humanitarian mission at space prison.
Right.
And he has to go rescue her because space prisoners take over the joint.
Mm-hmm.
And he saves her, and the first thing he does is, like, make a blowjob joke at her. Like,
classy.
She's... Yeah, and it just, it goes from there. It's, he's repellent as a lead in this film. And Guy Pearce is great.
Yeah.
Like, you see him in things and you think, oh yeah, he's cool. Not here. It's awful. So awful. Another thing I said in my review, I would sooner spend space eternity with Jar Jar Binks than this guy.
All righty
then. There you go.
Gosh. Yeah. Well, I'm glad I missed it then. Eek.
The audience, it was packed.
On a Friday morning?
I missed the screening.
Right.
So I had to go Friday morning. And you know how they do you when you go to the movie theater and they're like, pick your seat. Which I hate. I hate the assigned seat.
I know.
They make you pick your seat, and they have all these, like, green means it's open and red means it's not open. And there's all these red marks in the theater, and you're like, this is a 9:30 in the morning screening of Space.
Why is anybody else?
Space Prison at 9:30 in the morning. No one's there are not that many people here. Oh no. It was totally packed. They didn't seem happy when it was over, though. They all just sort of shuffled out, like...
Trudge of the damned.
Yeah, it was... No one was happy. If this got a better cinema score than Cabin in the Woods, then I want to kill everybody. That's... There, I'll just say that.
Yeah. I'll have to look that up. I don't know if... I have no idea. I don't even know if every movie gets a cinema score, if you have to sort of pay for that kind of thing.
I don't know.
Letters. We keep putting them off.
All right.
And we have some good ones.
I've had the mic sitting on my belly this whole time. I'm going to put it on the table now. And I'm going to pull up the letters from you, the people.
Our listeners.
The people who gave Cabin in the Woods a C-minus cinema score.
Don't blame them for that.
Where is it?
I know our guru Anthony was a fan.
What's happened? My email's being weird. Hang on just a second. No, I got it.
Do you have them on your sheet? Oh, yeah, I got it right here. Ready to go.
Wait. I pulled up all the ones from Alonzo Duralde. Oh, by the way, stop sending me Groupons.
I only send them occasionally for things that I think you might be
into. I pulled up all the Alonzo Duralde emails. Stop sending me Groupons for 75% off yoga and cycling in West Hollywood.
It's just down the street.
You know what I'm not going to do?
Yoga and
cycling.
Oh, fine. It's stationary bikes.
Like, I don't care.
You're not cycling around the neighborhood or anything.
I know you all thought I was going to say I don't do yoga, but joke's on you. Fat guy does yoga, so. Afterlife Corrida?
Right, well that's... We have a listener who wants to know if we've seen Afterlife, right. And we have not.
Hi, Alonzo and Dave. Saw a great movie called Afterlife in Japanese. Director Hirokazu Koreeda, 1998, about what happens in the afterlife. In view of your previous ire, I looked but couldn't find a review of either of yours. If you have reviewed it, feel free to...
Yeah, I've heard of the movie, but I've never
seen
it.
This is not the Christina Ricci movie, right?
No, okay. No. Because
that was great. Ugh. That was the dumbest thing. That was one of the dumbest movies. You should see that movie.
No.
That movie is hilarious.
Do not tell people to see that movie. It was...
After Dot Life? That's
yes, the, yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah. No. That's a get a group of friends together and
I
watch.
Guess. I don't know if there's enough red wine in the world to make that movie palatable. Oh, man.
That's the thing.
So yes. Anyway, no, we have not seen the Japanese Afterlife, but we'll put it on our list to look for.
And then, all right, what's the next one? The next email. I'm sorry, it's taking so long.
Keep it rolling.
Every time I click on one, it takes me back to the top.
Well, there's one letter about the clock, and there's two letters about the Rachel Weisz discussion.
I'm getting it.
Make sure you use clean language when reading the not clean letters.
Linoleum knife and pretty ladies is the name of the subject on this email.
From?
Dan. Dear Alonzo and Dave, great show as usual this week. That's right. I particularly enjoyed the discussion of beautiful actresses with Rachel Weisz as springboard.
This was back when we were talking about her new movie, The Deep Blue Sea.
The Deep Blue Sea, which is really great.
Yes.
Speaking for at least one straight guy who loves movies, I'll reply that she's very beautiful. We'd love to hit that. But not distractingly so. You're right on the money with Miss Theron, though. I don't remember or care whether I actually liked Young Adult or not, and getting to watch her the whole time is why. So far, though, there's only one actress I'm consistently unable to write or talk about a film without mooning over, and that's Amber Heard. I don't generally fall for blondes, but I get major butterflies during Drive Angry, The Rum Diary, even The Ward. She's got to be the link. P.S. Alonzo, I'm just one guy here, but Christina Hendricks is my, oh, I love her, girl. So straight guys have an, oh, I love her.
Apparently so.
Kind of girl, too. That I did not know. She's stunning and wonderful and desirable, of course, but I think I'd be happy just to have her come by my office one day and give me a stir and give me stern, sensible advice. That's funny.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Dan. Okay, back to message. Hang on, I'm doing it. Leave me alone.
I can't trust anything.
I'm doing it. Rachel Weiss, F, marry, or kill.
Rachel Weiss, Rachel Weiss.
This is from Derek. Hello, I'm straight.
That's what this, hi, Derek.
This is a, hello, I'm straight.
Well, we did ask straight guys to.
I love the podcasts and look forward to hearing it every week. Also, I speak on behalf of all Canadians.
Thank you for Goon.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Hang on. Also, I speak on behalf of all Canadian breeders of the black persuasion.
Whoa!
As far as this whole Rachel Weisz thing shakes out, she's a Mary or a kill, I guess, depending on which other ladies are involved. But she is not
an F.
An F.
Okay.
That's all. And keep up the good work. Also, more food talk and no talking while the food is in your mouth.
You know, I never think of Canada having people of color besides Drake.
You're racist.
Well, you're think about it. I mean, you're I'm sorry, I just, racist. This is somebody who's watched Degrassi for years.
You are totally racist. You're right. Stop talking.
Because actually, now that I think about it, one of my favorite Canadian directors is Chinese.
You're an idiot.
You're right.
That's your line to me, but you're an idiot.
Sorry. There was a brief moment, but now I just thought of,
right,
you know, how much I love Double Happiness.
So. Yeah. Stupid.
Okay, fine. Thank you for Sandra O, Canada. Even though I never watch Grey's Anatomy.
Where else?
There's that the clock email. Which
the
is
clock the, email. Which is really I've great. Got the clock email right here. The clock email. Hi, David Alonso. I wanted to let you know that it's from somebody. Who's it from? It's from Jennifer.
I think also a Canadian.
Also in Canada. I wanted to let you know that I really enjoyed this week's episode, regardless of all the tangents, or perhaps because of them. I also wanted to tell you that it is not just major cosmopolitan cities where you can see the clock at an art museum. The National Gallery of Canada, here in my home city of Ottawa, a city often maligned for being dull and clogged with civil servants, showed it all through March, and thanks to hearing you talk about it on previous broadcasts, I was really excited to go see it. My friend Adam and I went around 7 p.m. last Thursday night, and there was a long but swift moving line of people waiting to get in. This included young hipsters, older suburban types, and even a few school-aged children manically trying to get their homework done while waiting in line. We got in at about 7:30 and stayed until just after 9. I am pregnant and was struggling to stay awake by that point. The viewing room had a bunch of comfortable white love seats, and after a few minutes of sitting on the floor...
Can you believe this?
We scored spots on one of the front row love seats, which was great. I only recognized four of the films, To Kill a Mockingbird, Moonstruck, 1984, and White Christmas, but I had a great time watching it and wished I'd had a chance to go back and watch more before it closed this past weekend. My husband was really curious about whether they would use about whether they had used the Groundhog Day clip at 6:02 a.m., so I was really happy when you mentioned on your podcast that they did. Anyway, I never would have gone to see it if you hadn't talked about it many months ago, so thanks for that. What a cool experience. Mine was sadly lacking in free donuts, though. You don't give a pregnant person?
Hey, a love seat. I know. Ottawa, I am disappointed in you.
I don't understand that.
How do you let a pregnant woman sit on the floor?
My mind is blown.
I know. I got nothing. But anyway, thank you, Jennifer. We appreciate it.
Those are all the emails. That's it. That's every email.
Yes, but we're done. We've been meaning to share those. So if you would like to contact us, again, our email address is linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you with your opinions about the Three Stooges, about...
what's your cinema score of Cabin in the Woods?
Exactly.
Email us. Give us your cinema score grade of Cabin in the Woods.
We'll do our own average.
Yeah, let's do our own cinema score average.
You know, your thoughts about Dave using the phrase riffraff, even. And not in terms of the Ken Loach movie.
I love all of you riffraff. but recognize yourself for what you are.
All right. DVD recommendations.
Loving the Ladies.
Yes.
Loving the Ladies. Loving the Ladies.
Tell them who stars in it.
Richard Dix.
We're 8 years old. Dave's never even seen Loving the Ladies starring Richard Dix.
I don't know who he is. I've never seen it. He just likes saying it. But it's coming out on DVD this week. It's from what year?
Warner Archive, 1930.
1930.
Richard Dix was an early talkie star.
I want to see... I got to see this now. I got to see Richard Dix star in Loving the Ladies. I need to see this movie.
Well,
and it's my DVD recommendation for me.
We will hunt it down. Also out this week is a reissue of, it was actually originally made for Japanese television, animated show from animator... Isao Takahata, I believe I'm saying his name right, or Isao Takahata, the guy behind Grave of the Fireflies and Pompoko and some of my favorite Studio Ghibli stuff, worked on a show called Panda Go Panda. And I have discovered that if you know someone who has like a 2 or 3 year old child.
Oh, yeah.
Panda Go Panda is the greatest DVD you can ever give them. They will love you forever because kids love it. It is a magical catnip for young yeah. children. So Jennifer,
animated pandas jumping around.
After you give birth and in about a year or two, you need something to entertain the wee one. Panda Go Panda. I highly recommend it. As always, we want to. Thank you. Dave is reminding me that I've been doing some work
with a cue card.
Yes.
We've
been watching the Stephanie Miller show on Current, and so now we see how radio people communicate with each other silently. I've been doing some work for Outfest. I'm helping them program this summer's festival coming up in July. Outfest is the Los Angeles Gay and Lesbian Film Festival. And one of the things that we're doing to celebrate Outfest's 30th anniversary, which happens this year, is a new program called Downtown 30. And we're doing monthly screenings at the Downtown Independent. It's going to be new films and classic films of interest to the GLBT community. And it kicks off this Wednesday, April 18th.
GLBT? It was LGBT.
LGBT. It's been...
Ladies first.
In the Outfest name, it's been GLBT for a while. I think it's actually we're switching it to LGBT soon, because that's the usual usage now. Anyway, we are kicking the festival off this Wednesday, April 18th, with a screening of the not available on DVD and really awesome Robert Altman film, Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean, starring Cher, Sandy Dennis, and Karen Black. And it's a terrific movie, and it doesn't turn up a lot. So if you are in Los Angeles and you want to schlep downtown, it's actually a really cool little neighborhood. There are places to eat down there. There's tons of parking. The movie doesn't start till 8 o'clock, so you've got plenty of time to get out of work and make it downtown for this movie. It's going to be really awesome. There's going to be an absolute reception afterwards, so there will be free booze. And the Downtown Independent is a really cool space. If you've never been there, you should check it out.
And you'll get to meet Alonso.
And I will be there. So if you are a local and you're a fan of the show and somehow we've never met, because I think I know both people who listen, please come up and say hey.
I'll be at the lucky one. Aren't I the lucky one?
That's what we call irony, kids. Yep. So anyway, Wednesday, April 18th, come back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean at the Downtown Independent. And I'm going to be talking about it on Frank DeCaro's show Wednesday morning as well. So if you're a serious radio subscriber, you might want to tune in for that.
Ask him why he never has me on for any reason.
Has he not?
He has in the past.
Oh, well then.
But not lately.
Well, what have you done for him lately?
Nothing. No. But I'm so great.
You were so good on the radio. You need some new thing to plug.
True. I have no activities, really.
Although you do have an article in the new issue of Slake.
Oh, yeah. The new Slake.
is it available now? Is
it S-L-A-K-E. It's a Los Angeles literary magazine.
It's a quarterly.
Because, you know, I don't just write about movies.
Oh, no.
I write about important things, too.
Yes.
Me. And that's...
Is the new issue available?
It's available, yeah. It's out right now.
You can get it on Amazon. You can get it all kinds of places.
So yeah, the theme is dirt. So the issue is simply called dirt.
We will. I'll put a link to where you can get Slake on the Linoleum Knife page on Facebook. And if you have not already gone over there and clicked like, please do. We appreciate it. And tell your friends about it. Tell your friends about the show in general, frankly. We are... tiny, slowly, you know, climbing from week to week. So if you are a fan of the show, let people know.
Step by step.
Go to...
inch by inch.
Slowly I turn. Go to iTunes and leave us a nice review if you haven't already. A lot of you have, and we appreciate it. And want to thank, of course, our good friends in the podcast universe, The Popcorn Mafia, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Blowhard, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, The Showbiz Sandbox, Secretly Timid, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, and the Schmoes Know. These are all fine programs that you will enjoy greatly, I think. And actually, a new one, a relatively new one. If you used to listen to the IFC podcast with Matt Singer and Allison Wilmore, which is always a lot of fun, they are now doing periodically a podcast called Film Spotting SVU, and the SVU stands for Streaming Video Unit, and they talk about movies that are currently available for download and streaming. What?
Are you done?
So as always,
we
thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again next week.
Success!
Success!
Success! Goodbye.